You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall with you once again on this edition of the William Hill Golf Podcast. We're going to look ahead to the Omega European Masters very shortly. Dave Tindall opposite me here in the studio. Good morning to you, Mr. Tindall.
Good morning to you, David.
Are you well?
Yes, I am well, but slightly bamboozled by there being no American Tour event this week.
Yeah, the seasons, breaking between the seasons in the PGA
Tour. Finished by August. Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And it does set us up for a nice end to the European Tour season, and that will be our primary focus over the next few weeks, I'm sure. Have you had a good bank holiday weekend?
Busy working.
Have you?
So not seeing a lot of sun. How about you?
That's a shame. I was out in the sun at Ripon yesterday, managed to not back a winner there, so that was good fun.
You didn't, I gave someone a winner at York, actually 7-1.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
But maybe we should do a racing podcast and just forget about the golf.
You weren't at Headingley then?
I wasn't at Headingley. Yeah. I wish I had been at Headingley.
Yeah, me too.
Because that was just simply the most scintillating sporting event I've seen this year, definitely.
Absolutely. I used to live in Headingley for about 15 years, just around the corner, but seen nothing like that before.
And
do you know what the in-running odds were, by the way?
I only saw when England were around about 2-1 when they needed like 30 to win. I wasn't checking them throughout. And I know England went, when they were 4 down, they went odds on for a prolonged period as well. But then obviously the wickets came crashing down.
Yeah.
And then it was Stokes left with, who can bat at the other end? Just hold the other end.
Well, we found him then, didn't
we? Yeah, did. Jack Leach, the hero.
But yeah, I just won because we famously sort of remember Headingley 81 and it was 500-1.
Yeah.
I think bookmaking was a bit more naive in those days and you'd never get anything like that. But I was just wondering.
No, I don't think they were ever anywhere near that.
Nothing
big
like that, but I just wonder what they did go with needing, 71?
Yeah.
This is a golf podcast, isn't it, by the way?
Yeah, yeah, but you remember 81, Dave. What was the more special performance for you, 81 and Botham?
I have been thinking about this a lot, actually. I think 81 needed more elements. Basically, this was a fantastic test match, but the thing that swung it was the last wicket partnership, where in 81 you needed not only to follow on and then set them some sort of toe, you needed to bowl them out for 100-odd.
Yeah.
So it had more elements, 81, I think. Slightly better.
Okay. Should we talk golf?
Yes.
Let's talk golf. Oh, by the way, just before we talk golf, DRS as well doesn't work because the
Stokes wasn't hitting
middle. Yeah. It was going nowhere near middle. And it's not detected the deflection off the front pad.
That's a bit of a problem, isn't it? When
massive problem.
We put ourselves at the kind of mercy of technology and
I'm against VAR as well, so maybe I'm just a technophobe and I don't want to see it employed in or deployed in sport.
What about in golf, though, in terms of shot clocks?
Oh, yeah, that's a different thing, though, isn't it?
But it's still got to be sort of measured. And
I suppose so. I'm open to anything that will improve the speed of the game.
Yes.
But, yeah, that DRS needs sorting out, and VAR needs sorting out as well.
You tell them.
Maybe I'm just a technophobe. Let's get stuck into this week then. And just before we do that, let's talk about the brilliant performance from Rory McIlroy at Eastlake to win the FedEx Cup for a second time. I'm sure in the back of his mind going into that final round on Sunday, he'll have been thinking about TPC Southwind and the FedEx St Jude and how Brooks Koepka tore him apart in the final round. To put on that performance on Sunday was special for McIlroy. And to finish the season 0.7 of a shot better than anyone in strokes gain terms is sensational. 3 wins, including the Players' Championship as well. 14 top 10s in 19 starts, but no major top 5 finishes, and that will hurt McIlroy.
He said his dream or his goal, not a dream as such, a goal is to have a strokes gained of 3, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's what he thinks would be.
And he was around about 2.5, was he?
Maybe a bit less.
A bit less on the season, wasn't it?
But if you were to say to a sort of half, three-quarters golf fan, has McIlroy had a great season? I reckon they'd say no, because I still think you measure golf in majors, ultimately, and he's not had a top five.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think there's
an
asterisk. If he claims this is a good season, well, if anyone claims it's a brilliant season for him, I think, is it?
Well, people are saying that he
fluffed his lines at the Open spectacularly.
He should be player of the year over Brooks Koepka, and I think that's a nonsense personally, because golf historically and in the future will be measured by major performance.
Yeah.
And Brooks Koepka won one this year, finished second in two others, and finished fourth in the other one.
And the thing is about that is it's not like it's some sort of retrospective look back, that's how it's measured. They know going into those events that is how they're the ones where everything is on the line. So, you know, the pressure there in the majors is bigger than it is for any sort of FedEx Cup thing. I know there's some money, but, you know, that's the thing, the majors. So they go into those events thinking this is defining my season, and Koepka came up with the goods.
McIlroy, the most consistent performer this season. Brooks Koepka had the better season.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I thought what one stat that I found hilarious was that Harry Diamond earned nearly as much as Jordan Spieth this season.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he was only a couple of, was it 100,000 or 20,000 off him? Something like that. I mean, Harry Diamond's earnings, given that McIlroy won the $15 million for the second time.
Yeah.
He must be absolutely delirious, Harry Diamond.
Waking up on Monday.
And the $15 million, it's an obscene amount of money, isn't it, basically? And you're getting paid down to 30th in that event. And it's all, in the end, down to Tiger. Tiger Woods revolutionised the sport for all these other players, didn't he?
Yeah, it is daft. I've come up with a new idea for the playoffs.
How did you think this one worked, first of all?
Okay, because that's the way it panned out, but it was at risk of not being okay.
Yeah.
But my idea is, which I thought of on the train coming in, is that...
Lots of thought gone into this then.
Well, maybe it had been brewing under there, but I finally sort of clarified my thoughts on it. In playoffs in other sports, you part of how they work is you whittle the number of participants down. So this basically became a four or five man tournament. You know, so why did we need all the sort of extra baggage of all these other guys? I think what they should have done was still start with a staggered start, but then after Thursday, knock 10 of them out, saying, no, you're out.
Right.
And then on day two, knock another. So you're left with maybe like six players in the final round, because the other lot were irrelevant by the end of it. So they were just, I know they're playing for their own money, but
yeah,
it's pointless. So I think that would focus in more.
Does that stagger give enough opportunity for those down at the bottom to work their way in?
Well, that's tough, isn't it? That's, you know, it's like teams go into other playoffs, you know, without home field advantage. So they're at a distance. So they've got to play well to get through to the next phase. So I think they should have binned them off earlier on, because they were, it's pointless, wasn't it? What was it, five? Very early on, you knew that 20 odd and more were irrelevant to the whole thing.
Yeah, Dustin Johnson had checked out after a few holes, hadn't
he? Yeah, so I don't know whether it'd be a way of sort of honing in. I wondered as well if you could even then reset it for the final round, get the best kind of five through to the last day and then reset it.
Yeah.
And go, there you go, boys. Or six, then you've got two balls.
I'm nowhere near as down as some other people on the format, I must admit. And maybe that's because of the way it did work out in the end, and it provided plenty of excitement going into Sunday with Koepka leading, McIlroy by one, Schauffele bang there as well. So maybe I'm a fan of how it worked out rather than the actual process to get there. But I wasn't negative on it last week on the podcast either, and I think it more or less worked. I'd like to see a smaller stagger, but it more or less works for me.
What about the idea of 20 odd of them were completely irrelevant?
I suppose so, but I was only watching the top end of the leaderboard anyway.
Right.
But so I wasn't bothered about them jostling for the extra few hundred thousand.
It'd give them more of a sort of eliminatory feel.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. good work. And
I'll be sending that into the PGA Tour.
Yeah, if you get any royalties.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
That's a painting tip, isn't that?
Away from the riches of the FedEx Cup, Erik van Rooyen got his first tour win as well. That had been coming. I don't think anyone backed him last week, but it had been coming.
Yeah, I think if you'd done the old process of, look, he's going to win one, I'm just going to back him for the next four or five. And it was a classy leaderboard, really, wasn't it, with Stenson and Matt Fitzpatrick.
He was unlucky, wasn't he, on 17?
Yeah, very unlucky.
Because that almost guaranteed...
Yeah. Two-shot swing. So, it's a good event, that.
Let's move on to this week then. Got a cracker this week, the Omega European Masters. Rory McIlroy in attendance here, 4-1 favourite. Matthew Fitzpatrick is 15-2. Tommy Fleetwood is 12-1. Danny Willett is 20s. Matt Wallace and Erik van Rooyen, both 22-1, 25-1. Alex Noren, Sergio Garcia and Bernd Wiesberger, both 28s. Rory Sabatini, Andrea Pavan, Thomas Peters, Lucas Biergaard, all 33-1, 40-1 and bigger the rest. And with the PGA Tour taking a break between seasons, all eyes on Europe, and that's a good thing as well, because this stop this week in Cron-sur-Sierre in the Swiss Alps is easily the most picturesque venue on the European Tour. One that I've never been to, but I think if I had a bucket list made out of European Tour stops, this would be number one, I think.
Yeah, it does look beautiful, doesn't it, on the TV. And
have you been?
No, I've not been to that one.
I thought you might have been to that one.
Is that, are you thinking Richie Ramsey and...
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Why didn't I go there? I don't know.
You
I was up in the Swiss
Alps. Yeah, you interviewed Richie Ramsey in the Swiss Alps, didn't you? So I presumed you were at the event.
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
I was at the wrong course, maybe. I don't know, but not been to this one.
No. It's a short course, isn't it? It measures less than 7,000 yards and plays a good deal shorter than that because of the altitude as well.
Yeah.
A number of the holes are tight and tree-lined, a couple of drivable par fours around the turn. And if you're putting the ball in play, there are a whole host of birdie opportunities. But if you stray off line, then you need a pretty sharp short game because the greens, the targets are so small.
Yeah, and hard as well.
Yeah.
So they, you know, it is tricky. And it does promote a lot of course specialists, I think, this event.
Yeah, and I think the weather's key as well, because obviously playing at altitude, if it's lovely, hot, sunny weather, the ball flies further. But then I think this is something Martin Keim has spoken about in the past. If it's rainy and a little bit chilly, you've got to recalculate.
Yeah.
So it is, as and that goes back to knowing the course as well, doesn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, exactly. I think guys who've been there in all weathers, I think they've definitely got a bit of a leg up this week.
I always rate scrambling pretty highly here.
Definitely, yeah.
And finding fairways as well, I think. We say it's, you can say it's crucial some weeks when it's not, but I think it is this week.
Yeah, I think so. And in terms of kind of correlating events, you'd maybe look at Hong Kong. That's a short par 70. The one in Kenya as well, that's at altitude.
Yeah.
Johannesburg events, they're at altitude.
Mm.
Little ways in. I've actually got... three picks, all three figures.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, I've just got a couple of selections, neither three figures.
And I could have had about nine picks.
Yeah, I think it is one of those events, though, isn't it, where there's a lot of players with decent course form coming to the event with decent current form.
And obviously the market's made, isn't it, by the fact that you've got McIlroy and Fleetwood and Fitzpatrick all playing?
Yeah, but...
It could easily come 1, 2, 3, to be honest.
They could. I get the feeling for McIlroy, it's kind of it's going to be a
week in the hills.
Yeah, week in the hills, and he's gone with his wife and his father and mother-in-law. So I think he's gone because it's a beautiful venue for a holiday, and he's going to take his clubs and play a bit of golf as well.
Yeah, because he's there because he's got to play in an Omega event, and he didn't play the Dubai Desert Classic, so he's got to fulfil that contract. It doesn't mean to say he's just going to turn up and hit it with one hand while he's on the phone, but you could see him just playing well without quite putting everything in.
But then if he's still on cloud nine after last week...
He could win it by seven or something.
Yeah, of course he could. Yeah.
He's got a good record there, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's kind of factored into the price, isn't it? Yeah. 4-1, I think.
I think he's got second, third and seventh.
Yeah.
Last time he played was 2011, so it's been a while, but he knows it.
Yeah, and if he drives the ball like he did in the final round last week, he's going to be a huge threat. It's just whether or not there's any letdown with McIlroy. And I think it's all factored into the price. Yeah, I think 4-1 is about right, isn't it? Yeah. And I feel the same with Fitzpatrick as well.
Yeah.
I know that he's got an incredible course record and he's bidding for the hat trick and he finished second last week. But 15-2 is about the price I'd expect for Matthew Fitzpatrick going into this week, if not a shade short for my money, even though I'd expect him to possibly contend.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously defended it, and that sometimes people say, oh, it's harder to defend, but he's already done that. But three times in a row and at that price?
Not for me.
Not quite, no.
Okay, you kick us off then if you've got three selections, all at three figures.
Yeah, I'll still do this. I'll do it alphabetically.
Very good.
Which immediately,
is that first name or surname?
Both, so there's your clue. Do you want to say it? How are we saying this man now? Adri
Arnaus.
Arnaus, yes.
Yeah. 100-1.
100-1. Why is he 100-1?
I suppose on the back of the miscut and this being a quirky venue that people may think won't play to his strengths, but it could do.
We've talked about driving the ball straight here. Yep. And he was second at the Andalusia Masters at Valderrama. I know it's Spanish and he's Spanish, but still a very good effort. 15th in the Irish Open, and he was second at the Czech Masters a couple of starts ago. So you've got a player with two second places and a 15th in his last five starts. 100-1, that seems a bit big. I know it's his first look at the course, but we've got a little bit of Swiss form, and that's good. He played twice in Switzerland on the Challenge Tour last year, finished 11th and 4th, so seems to like going to the country.
That's good.
Which is a nice little tick. It is a price play, I have to say. He was just kind of looking down the price and seeing people who are in form and seeing, all right, 100-1 for a guy who's very, very talented and with the results to back it up.
Yeah.
That was kind of just an initial way to get me in. I think he's got definite each-way value.
Yeah, I can see that. Adri Arnaus is 100-1, the selection for Mr. Tindall. I'm going towards the top of the betting for my first pick. I like Alex Noren this week.
Yeah.
At 25-1. Course form, as you mentioned, is crucial at the track, and Noren has it in spades. Won this tournament twice in 2009 and 2016, and also finished ninth in 2011 and 6 2 years ago. It's been pretty well documented that he's yet to have a top 10 this calendar year, but I think that will make him, being a notoriously meticulous worker, make him a bit angry, and he'll want to finish the season strongly. And it's worth noting that he tied for 11th at the Open Championship, tied for 12th at the
I think that's worth more WGC than a 10th at Southwind. The Czech Open,
exactly, yeah. Exactly that. And those are two obviously top class finishes in stronger fields than this in his last four starts. Last week's performance in Sweden was pretty low key, finished 40th, but what I really like with his numbers last week, he ranked 8th in driving accuracy, 12th in greens in regulation, but the putter let him down. Back on greens, on which he thrives, hopefully he can find something with a flat stick. And if he does, I think he'll be a big threat this week. He's certainly got a point to prove, and I thought 25-1 for a multiple European Tour winner in the last 3 or 4 years was definitely...
Yeah,
worth playing here.
He would have been Fitzpatrick's price a few years ago.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I don't think he's that far off. I think it's the putter basically that's letting him down at the moment, and hopefully he'll find something with a flat stick and contend this week.
Yeah,
so he's my number one pick.
Yeah, very good. I will go to 100-1 again. I'm going to set you a little challenge here. He's 100-1. He's got brilliant course form, and he's won in 3 of the last 4 seasons.
Ashun Wu?
Correct, that's good.
Yeah. I had him on my list.
Oh, I've seen you that little.
Yeah,
it's good, isn't it? I mean, that is... Let's start with the course form then. 6th and 9th. 9th on debut. And these aren't from way back. 9th on debut in 2017. Tied 6th last year. Shot 65s on day 2 and 3. So clearly likes this course. Mm. Ideal for him, really. He's not a big hitter, but he's a very, very good short game exponent. So really one that he looks forward to. And then, yeah, he's not the most consistent, you know, week in, week out. And you go through this year and he's had a bit of a ropey year, but every so often he just pops up and he's got a 5th in his home China Open. And he was last week in Sweden.
He was bang there, wasn't
he? The record book shows him tied 20th, but he was tied 2nd after rounds 2 and 3. So he's just had a bit of a dip at the end, but one thing you talked about, numbers, recent numbers, he was 2nd in scrambling in Sweden, so I thought that was a nice pointer for what he needs to do well this week. And just the fact that we're not kind of talking about some plucky guy who might finish fifth. He wins. When he's good, he wins. That's, you know, I can't think, you won't find anyone at that price who's won three in the last 4 years, will you, at all?
No, I think...
And on a course he loves.
It's just,
I think it's a disrespectful price, 100 to 1.
Yep. I can see that. Ashun Wu, he was on definitely on my long list this week. The Chinese, 100 to 1, Ashun Wu. My second pick is Alexander Bjork.
Right.
And he was just, he's just been clipped in. I know Steve Rawlings, top betting columnist, likes him as well. So I think he posted just as we were walking into the studio, and he's been clipped as a consequence. 66 to 1 he is now, Alexander Bjork. But I'll still play him because I had him down on my... as one of my two selections before I came in here. Short game, obviously crucial at Crohn's, and Bjork is the one that leaps off the page, really, in that respect. He's got one of the best short games on tour, fifth in scrambling this season. So he's looking for some course form and some current form then, and he's actually got a bit of both. He was 16th on this course a couple of years ago when he opened up 68-65 to be banging contention on his debut at halfway. And last year he was forced to withdraw. Not sure what the problem was, but he actually opened up with a 69, which wasn't too bad, but pulled out before round two. He's putting well at the moment, driving the ball solidly. Last two starts, he's finished in a tie for 23rd in the Czech Republic and a tie for 20th last week in his home open, the Scandinavian Invitation. Hopefully he can contend. So I thought Alexander Bjork was worth an each way bet at 66 to 1.
Yeah, a couple of Swedish Alexes for you then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Third pick then.
Third pick, I actually picked this guy last week and he did okay without quite getting there. I think, did I pick him for top 20 last week? Jack Singh Brah.
Yeah.
And he was 37th and not far off. He just opened a little bit slowly with a 71, then went 68, 66, 67. So we're only a couple of shots away from landing that bet. As at the time of doing this podcast, we don't seem to have top 10 and top 20 betting, but...
I'll have a, not that I'll have a check see. On that for you.
But if you do find it, think of him in that market too. But I'm going to do half a point each way at 150s. I think that is a big price. If you look in the Scandinavian Invitation, I think what we need to do well this week, he did that last week. He was fourth in driving accuracy, 84.6% of fairways hit, sixth in scrambling. So the bits of his game that need to be good here are very good. It's his course debut, which... obviously means that's why he's a big price. But why I went for him last week was he'd finished 14th in a Czech Masters and 15th in Andalusia. He also played well in the Kenya Open, which we said was at altitude, finished tied 12th there. So he's hovering around that top 10, top 20. Did you find it, by the way?
No. We've not published them yet.
But when they're up, definitely look at him for top 20, but what the heck, I'm going to do half point each way at 150s. I just think he's close. I mean, there's a few big names to get past, so maybe top 20s is a bit, top 20 a bit more realistic, but I'm going to have a go at 150s for a player. I think he's in nice form and on another course that should suit him down to the ground.
Very good. Yeah, I like that. So three picks at big prices for you this week, Dave. Who were the others that caught your eye? I must admit... Beef Johnston was one.
Yeah.
But he's into 50s now, which is a little bit skinny for me, but I think he will finish the season pretty strongly after his travails earlier on this year. Plenty of positives with his recent form. He was fantastic over the weekend at Sweden, finished tied for third at Crohn's a couple of years ago, and this is the sort of venue that suits his game.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Danny Willett as well has got a very good course record.
Yeah,
I imagine he'll be on most short lists or long lists this week. Maybe less obvious, but I still think he's going to win very soon. Gavin Green, he's a price. I think if you're in the Gavin Green will win camp, which I am, I think you can go in again here at 66. He's quite merrily.
I think he played well last year in this event, didn't
he? Yeah, he was tied 12th last year and just had a bad final round. He was shot 63 in round three. And then last week he was 16th at the Scandinavian Invitation, which was good effort, closing 65 after a hot start in the Czech Masters.
I'd look at him first round leader.
First round leader. His first round leader scores are immense. 66, 64, 67, 66, 66. Definitely in that market. But I think
was it the Czech Masters that I think back-to-back years now he's led after solo lead after the first round.
So I don't know what happened to him for the rest of that tournament.
No.
But obviously last week finishing with a 65 as opposed to finishing with a 75 as he did in Czech, that's promising, gives him some momentum coming to here where he knows he can play well. So he's definitely one, I thought, at 66s.
Yeah, I'm interested in a couple of the players that have been applying their trade on the PGA Tour. Troy Merritt, I thought. And Rory Sabatini's just had just a scintillating season on the numbers. And this is the sort of track that Rory Sabatini would thrive on. You know, if it was a par 70 in the States at 7,000 yards, he'd be one of those that you'd think of having a close look at, because he is all about, you know, fairways and greens, Sabatini, on a short course that he can't overpower. And 33-1, it wouldn't surprise me if he went well up in the mountains this week as well. So, and the other one I liked was Marcus Kinnelt. He, again, like Beef Johnston, finished very quickly last week, returning to a bit of form. And this is just the sort of track for Kinholt, so he was on my mind as well.
Yeah, what about Austrians? Because they were all brought up in the mountains.
Yeah, Matthias Schwab.
Yeah, well, obviously people will think of Wiesberger first, but I wonder if Schwab's a slightly more interesting bet. He's 80s, Wiesberger 28s.
Yeah. I just wonder whether Wiesberger, having won those two events,
it's kind of switched off a little bit.
Is he the sort of elite player that's going to win 3, 4, 5 times in the season?
Probably not.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's gone slightly off the boil.
He's played, I mean, his course form is pretty exposed and it's not that great. He's had 6 goes at it, a couple of missed cuts, 30th, 40th. He's got 6th and a 13th.
Yeah.
So he's got some course form. It's not one of these where every year he's up there.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the secondary Austrian
Schwab
week.
Schwab. If I read that Schwab was brought up at altitude high in Austria and spent a lot of time skiing,
yeah, you'd have a few quid on him.
Yeah.
Very good. Who's the player you don't want to win this week? I wouldn't be upset if McIlroy or Fitzpatrick won at those prices. I'd be more upset if Willett won at 20-1, I think.
Yeah. Might even be Norrin, but as you're on him, that's really...
No, that's fine.
What do you think of Fleetwood at 12s? Just not playing well enough. And
no, I wasn't interested in Fleetwood this week.
It just doesn't seem to take into account. And he's got slightly iffy course form of late.
Yeah.
He could turn that around. What was the other one I looked at the front end?
You can have Norrin if you want. I wouldn't hold it against you.
Okay. What do you think of Sergio?
He's
got a property on the course.
Yeah,
hasn't he?
It's weird that he doesn't attend very often, isn't it? That he sets up home there.
And maybe has it not clashed with the playoffs in recent?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah,
possibly it has.
Lots of them. You know, if he was in form, Eddie Pepperell at 50s looks a big price for what he can do. Westwood at 40s might like it as well.
Yeah.
So many, isn't there, really?
Yeah,
there's
tons of them, isn't there?
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap up then. Dave Tindall, your selection's got 3 of them this week.
Yeah, so 2 at 100-1, Adriaanouss and Ashan Wu. Ooh, what the heck? I'll go a point each way on both.
Yeah.
But I'll just go half a point each way on Jack Singbrar at 150s. But when the top 20 market comes out,
you'd look
I'll
at him
have a point
20.
On him as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Official point.
I'm going with 1.5 points each way on Alex Norrin at 25s and a point each way, Alexander Bjork at 66-1 this week. Thank you for your company, Dave.
Yeah, cheers, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Do make sure you check out the podcast at all the usual podcast places, audioboom.com included. And, of course, you can check out all the odds for the events this week at williamhill.com and on the William Hill app as well. And myself and Dave, we will be back for more golfing action next week. And if you're having a bet this week with William Hill, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.